In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the Golden Age of Radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word
and sing in your time.
Al Kemp, on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine. Shine your shoes anyway.
Tony Home Permanent presents...
This is Nora Drake.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. We'll join Dick Bertel, Ed Corcoran, and their special guest in just a moment. But first, be a payday saver at the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Go into any office of Burritt on the first day, last day, 15th day, or any day of the month, and you will meet a select group of savers, the payday savers, businessmen, tradesmen, professional people, career girls, and even mothers who save from the grocery money. Why do these people all stop in at the Big B? To save on a regular and very profitable basis. A payday saver is a regular saver. A saver who knows that only through a systematic plan of savings will he be able to pay for that college education, new home, or retirement trip around the world. At the Burritt, the payday saver receives 5% on a regular account with interest from day of deposit to day of withdrawal, 6% on 2-year certificates of deposit, 5.75% on 1-year certificates, and 5.25% on 90-day notice accounts. Join your friends at the sign of the Big B, the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, and become a payday saver. Deposits insured by FDIC. And now the host of the Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is the man with 2,000 hours of old-time memories on tape, Ed Corcoran. Ed, who is our guest tonight?
Well, Dick, we're very fortunate tonight. This gentleman was passing through Hartford, one of the real great names in radio, Don McNeil.
Yes, Don McNeil, for so many years, the host of the Breakfast Club. And, Don, when did you retire?
I haven't done that yet. I'm thinking about that now. No, as a matter of fact, I don't think, as long as I'm able to navigate, I'll ever quite make that. You know, I was thinking of writing a book called How It... Everything you've always wanted to know about how it feels after you retire, but have always been afraid to ask, but I never got around to do it.
The show was on the air for how many years, The Breakfast Club?
35 and a half.
And did you decide finally to call it a halt? Or?
Yeah, I decided simultaneously with the fact that there probably is no more entertainment, per se, on network radio, as you know. Godfrey, I guess, is the last holdout.
I guess, yes.
And so it's mostly news now and special events. And also, the last couple of years, I must admit, it was finally getting to me, getting to be a little bit of a chore.
What time did you have to get up in order to do the show? Because I guess it was on the air at 8 in Chicago, wasn't it?
Well, it was for a number of years. I used to have to get up at 5:15, 5:30 for years. Then, of course, with the advent of tape, the last few years we did it around 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, and that was a little more civilized.
Presenting America's favorite, the NBC Breakfast Club with Don McNeil.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Julia. We woke up bright and early, just a howdy to you. Coffee down and fruits and toast and bacon and skillet. Joe Galicchio and his boys have fumes for telling. So come on, gang, let's take a pool at this day's meeting. Line up, kids, I'll call the roll and sing your greetings. Nancy Martin.
Well, how do you do?
And Jack Baker. Glad to see you. The Vagabonds, our guest today.
The Breakfast Club fans, wake up and smile.
If not the morning happy, make life worthwhile. Good morning, breakfast lovers. Good morning to ya. We got up bright and early. Good howdy to ya. Daddy, mama, son, your fellas, all the way out there. America, alive. The breakfast love is on the air.
Good morning. No chance, please. Just good morning.
Shall we go back to the beginning and find out where the career of our guest Don McNeil began?
Yes, and also whether there were any significant format changes in the Breakfast Club through the years, or whether you maintained pretty much the same type of show throughout. Actually, could you tell us how it started, Don?
Where did you start, first of all, Don?
All right, which question do you want me to answer? Well, I started in a little town called Galena, Illinois, known as the birthplace of glory, General Grant having been born there. And he actually wasn't born there, but he lived there. And I started out being raised in Wisconsin, in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and went to Marquette in Milwaukee, and about the third year there, my dad's business failed, and I had to do something, so I got a job on the radio station, a radio station there. And also, I was writing a radio column. Both these chores, after school, for the princely sum of $15 a week. And, I mean, I was writing the radio column, too, because the editor of the radio column was frequently in a state where he couldn't write the radio column. And I was also doing a chore of announcing. This went on for 6 months, and I felt I was doing a sterling job, about to graduate, so I asked for $17 a week, and they fired me. Mm-hmm. And luckily I got on at another station in Milwaukee, and oh gosh, this goes on and on and on and on and on. Anyway, from there to San Francisco, to New York, back to Milwaukee, and then there was a program on network radio called the Pepper Pot in the morning. What it actually was, they had an orchestra there that they had to have because of union rules. They had all these guys sitting around, and they had a guy reading poetry. So the program manager figured they ought to have something to liven it up, and so they had auditions. So two or three of us stood in front of a microphone in an empty studio and told what we thought we would do. I only had a half a day to prepare for this. My wife drove me down from Milwaukee. And on the way down, I wrote first call to breakfast, second call to breakfast, memory time, march time, and got in front of a mic and said I would have a thing called the Breakfast Club with so-and-so, and that was it.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Back in what year, may we ask?
1933.
That was still, as I remember it, even in the late 60s, it was still pretty much in the same format.
That's right. Yeah.
And you stay with it all that time. That's a wonderful thing.
Except, of course, at the beginning, we had no audience. That came later.
It was a studio-originated program at first then, was it?
Yeah.
Of course, in later years, you originated from which hotel?
We'd go from one to another and move as they demanded rent, and we'd try another one. And, we were in quite a few of them.
Moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And, Don, there were so many people with you. Of course, I think perhaps the most well-known to Breakfast Clubbers, anyway, was Sam Cowling.
Yes. Sam is no longer in the business, per se. He's doing what he always liked to do, and that's he's always been a great fisherman, and he's selling fishing tackle.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. What about Fibber McGee and Molly? They had their start on your show, didn't
they? Yes, they did. And Toots and Chickie, they were known as in them days. And then they started this Fibber McGee and Molly thing.
Good thing they changed their name.
Yeah, it is, because you can get in some very bad mispronunciations there. And which happened once on the show when it was live, as I recall. So they started the business of Fibber McGee and Molly, and it took my singer, who was then Clark Dennis, and he sang with him for a long time, went to Hollywood eventually, and you know the rest of that story.
And as a matter of fact, you mentioned singers, and there were a number of singers who went on from the Breakfast Club.
Oh, I hate to try and remember them because I always forget them. But,
I think you can recall one at least.
Well, the one I remember, of course, was Johnny Desmond.
Johnny Desmond.
He was with the Miller Group over in Europe.
John Gary, and who's still around. And there was Jack Baker and Jack Owens going way back, and Dick Noel. We had some fine singers. I always tell a story which is more or less true about girl singers. We had a number of them, too. And I actually did turn down two girls who auditioned for the show by the name of Patty Page and Doris Day. That shows what a picker I am. I always thought Zsa Gabor right. would be a nun. I never was very good at picking stuff.
Be a payday saver at the Big B, Barrett Mutual Savings Bank. Come into any office of Barrett on any day of the month and meet a select group of savers. The payday savers, businessmen, tradesmen, professional people, career girls, yes, and even mothers who save from the grocery money. Why do these people all stop in at the Big B? To save on a regular and very profitable basis. A payday saver is a regular saver, one who knows that through a systematic plan of savings, he will be able to pay for that college education, new home, or retirement trip. At the Burritt, the payday saver receives 5% on a regular account with interest from day of deposit to day of withdrawal, 6% on two-year certificates of deposit, 5.75% on one-year certificates, and 5.25% on 90-day notice accounts. Join your friends at the sign of the Big B, the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, and become a payday saver.
Our guest tonight is Don McNeil, for over a quarter of a century, host of the Breakfast Club from Chicago, host to millions of Americans across the country each day.
Yes, another very famous alumni, and who is remembered maybe more for the role on your show than in her own career, Fran Allison.
Yeah.
Cougar Fran Ollie. What was her character like? Could you reconstruct a little bit
more? Aunt Fanny?
Yes.
Oh, she was and is wonderful. That character of Aunt Fanny, I don't know after whom it was really modeled, but there's an Aunt Fanny in every small town, and every big town, too. Everybody has an Aunt Fanny, I'm sure. And she used to, one of the things she was famous for, she'd read me these letters written by supposedly her friend Nettie. And they always started out by Nettie saying, "Dear Aunt Fanny, here I am, and I have just had a siege of my old headaches, and they have snapped and cracked and throbbed and beat front and back."
Was that Don Adlib, too, or is that written, most of her roles that she played?
She'd have notes.
Notes, and just most of it was Adlib, though, the whole show.
Yeah, I never knew. I had never any idea what she was going to talk about.
Just ice cold over the network.
Right.
You must take a lot of nerve to do that, a lot of steel nerves.
That's what I have always operated on.
I guess you'd have to.
Yeah, not much talent, just nerve.
I guess then you were the original daytime MC, were you?
I guess so. When I started, daytime radio was really a throwaway time. It didn't amount to much at all. And as you know, over the years, nighttime became less important, and daytime became the important part of the day as far as radio is concerned, or the most important, I should say, with the advent of television. So I saw a great many changes.
Chicago was one of the centers for the golden age of radio, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, I would say so. There was the Phil Baker Show in the early days, and there were several others, names of which I can't recall. Easton Dumpke, that was a big thing in the early days of radio. Does this ring a bell with you at all?
I'm afraid not.
No, Amos and Andy, they were from Chicago, weren't they?
Amos and Andy, of course, yes.
And it's hard. I think a lot of Detroit, the Lone Ranger and that type of series, but Chicago, it's sometimes hard to pinpoint some of the shows that started in there other than your own and a few others.
Well, a peculiar thing is Chicago spawned a great many radio people who went on to New York and Hollywood. It did exactly the same thing in television, as you know, with the Dave Garraways and Greg Garrison, some of these great directors who direct the big variety shows and so on, all came from Chicago.
Can you recall just some of the particular shows that kind of stick in your mind, that all that long series, some things that happened on the show that, you know, you would never forget?
On
your
Breakfast
show.
Club?
Yes.
Well, there's one story that often comes to my mind that, and the reason I kind of like to recall it, it kind of pinpoints what the show was made of. We used to have these groups of ladies who would come in. They would hire a bus and come in from as far away as 100, 150 miles. And this was a big deal to come in Chicago and start in with the Breakfast Club. Then they would all go somewhere and have lunch, and they'd take in a play and back home and laughing and scratching all the while, you know, usually a club or something like that. Great fun. So one of these clubs was in there one morning, and there I noticed a card filled out by a girl, some lady whose name was Maud, and she had on there, I do not like cereals, radio cereals. This was in the heyday of the radio cereal program. So I thought this ought to be kind of fun. I interviewed her, and I said, well, what don't you like about them? Oh, she said they go on and on. People do things, but they never resolve. They're always going on and on, and they never finish. And I said, well, it's too bad you don't like those. She said, another thing I don't like. I said, what that? She said, these audience participation programs. Well, I pointed out to her she was on one right then, and I said, what don't you like about me? Oh, she said, you're all right, except you get too silly once in a while. Well, this gave me a springboard, so every once in a while during the show, I'd go back and stick a microphone in front of her and say, Maud, is this being too silly? Are we too silly for you? And that went on during the whole show. And finally, at the end, I said, Maud, I hope I haven't embarrassed you in any way. And she said, no, but I'd just like to ask you one question. And I said, what's that? And she said, what in the world would you have done for material if I hadn't shown up this morning? And that kind of pinpoints exactly what happened. We never knew what was going to happen.
There were many imitations of the Breakfast Club, weren't there?
Yes, I guess you could call them that. In fact, you look at the talk shows popular on television now, and there's none of them are quite like the Breakfast Club, but a lot of the elements are there.
Some of the shows that I was thinking of, Ed, were Breakfast at Sardi's, and perhaps the biggest one other than the Breakfast Club itself, and that was Breakfast in Hollywood.
Oh, yes. Did you actually...
Those were the same thing, by the way. Breakfast. It started out as Breakfast at Sardi's with Tom Brenneman, became Breakfast in Hollywood with Tom Brenneman, and then when Tom died, Gary Moore took over that show.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember Gary Moore moving into that slot.
Yeah.
And you did actually serve a breakfast. That was just more than just a name.
That's propaganda.
Oh,
we gave
Ed is so naive.
You're going to shed all my illusions here.
Yeah.
I thought that's I was going to ride away for tickets because I was going to be in Chicago. That's a good way to get started in the morning.
All we gave him was entertainment. Very little of that.
You had a full orchestra, of course.
Most of the time they were.
No, I feel like Maud.
If you're going to feed me those good lines, I'll answer. Well, yes, we did have a big orchestra, about 20 pieces or so, and we were the last of the big spenders with that big orchestra.
Yeah, that's right. At one time in the late 50s, ABC Radio decided that they were going to attempt, at least, to maintain the network programming by modeling that programming after the Breakfast Club.
Yes.
Didn't work, did it?
No, I'll never forget that, where they had about five Breakfast Clubs during the day with Merv Griffin had one of them.
I know who you're thinking of, yeah. And I can't come up with his name either.
Jim Backus.
Yeah.
Jim Backus had another... golly, isn't that awful? Oh, Dick Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
They had good names, you know. But
Herb Oscar Anderson is the one.
That's another guy,
right.
Yeah. But like everything else, I don't know. There was the Breakfast Club. It just happened to fit at the time it was on, and to think that you could do the same thing two, three times a day proved to be a very wrong concept.
At one time, the Breakfast Club was a simulcast on both radio and TV.
Right. That, too, was an idea that didn't work because, there are no more simulcasts left. The obviously wrong thing about that was that you couldn't get sponsors to sponsor you on radio and television at the same time. It was not a very economical way to do it. And that was the days before tape. And even if you had tape now, I don't know whether you could actually edit out one sponsor and put in another and make it work. So we had to go one way or the other, and we were doing so well on radio that that's obviously the way we went.
Mm-hmm. Well, for 35 years, you were the host of the Breakfast Club, Don, and I know you're not retired, so what are you doing now?
Glad you happened to bring that up. I'll tell you a couple of things that I do. One is that I'm thoroughly enjoying doing a little teaching. did it at Marquette University, my alma mater, the last 2 years, and this year I'm going to Notre Dame to do the same thing, communications. Give them what benefit I might have gleaned from my experiences over the years, and I find quite a few of these seniors who are very interested in this type of thing. Even though radio may have changed and television may have changed, the basics of communication and the person-to-person talking one to another are still there. So that I'm enjoying thoroughly. I'm learning a lot. Then during the summer, I have a summer camp for underprivileged boys, which I've had for 18 years at a lake I happen to have near Chicago. I enjoy that. I enjoy golfing. I enjoy fishing. And I enjoy hunting. And during the first 4 months of the year, I'm very active, as I have been for the past 8 years now, for the Mackle brothers, who are men of great integrity and fine developers of land in Florida.
Well, Don, I want to thank you very much for being our guest here on
the
Golden Age of Radio.
Sorry, I wasn't able to get in the commercial there.
Do you know how being a preferred borrower at Burritt Mutual Savings Bank can help you? The other day, we asked a man who was waiting in the personal loan department if this were the first time that he had applied for a loan at the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. No, he said. It was actually the fourth. Now, why had he come back to the Burritt? Burritt was his bank. The loan officers were friendly and sympathetic to his needs, and they were willing to take the time to discuss his financial problems and help him. The rates are lower, he said. Monthly payments are convenient, and once he had established credit at the Burritt, he had become a preferred borrower, and his loans got top priority. Sound like a position you would like to be in? If so, drop in at any one of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank's 4 convenient offices. You, too, may become a preferred Burritt borrower. The long-term benefits are tremendous.
Well, there's a strange new development for you. What does it mean? What can the answer possibly be to these odd, fantastic happenings just over the county line from Dopey? Thrills, action, and adventure lie ahead of us, so be sure to join Tom Mix and his Ralston Straight Shooters tomorrow in the next breathtaking episode of The Mystery of the Vanishing Village. And don't miss this sensational offer. Sheriff Mike Shaw will send you an exact official copy of his famous whistling badge for your very own. Just imagine wearing an exact copy of the same badge Sheriff Mike wears. Boy, this badge is made of metal, shaped like an official shield, has cross six shooters at the top, and the word Sheriff in big raised letters. And right in the center of this handsome knockout-looking all-metal badge, there's a special siren whistle built in. When you blow the whistle, it sounds like this. Boy, oh boy, all the money in the world can't buy a badge like this. It's not for sale anywhere at any price. But Sheriff Mike will send you one as long as his limited supply lasts. And here's all you have to do to get yours. From the top of a package of delicious, bite-sized shredded Ralston, tear off the little circle with the letters RSS in it. Mail this little circle with RSS in it, together with your name and address, and 10 cents in coin to Tom Mix, Box 808, St. Louis, Missouri. And be sure to enclose 10 cents in coin. Remember the address, Tom Mix, Box 808, St. Louis, Missouri. That's all you have to do, and Sheriff Mike will send you his badge right away. But get your order in tonight, tomorrow sure. They're going fast, and you don't want to be disappointed. This offer is good only in the United States.
Oh, those are wonderful sounds. They bring back some fond memories to me, and I'm sure to most of our radio listeners tonight. We're going to devote the second portion of our program tonight to those wonderful radio premiums. And, Ed, we have two collectors with us tonight, Lou Holcomb of East Granby and Bruce Murray of Hartford. Lou, how far back does your collection go, do you know?
Well, actually, it's hard for me to do some quick subtraction right now. I imagine it's over 20 years.
And these...
Early 40s.
These items, actually, are things that you sent away for.
Yes, that I sent away for. For box tops of Wheaties and
How about those metal foil and Ovaltine? You ever send any of those in at all?
I probably did, but that brings back a little.
That was the prize of
that period that I don't recall.
I remember that one very vividly.
Bruce, what about you? You're a bit younger than the rest of us, actually.
Well, younger than me, anyway.
And you began your collection. As a matter of fact, you began your radio listening later than we did. What period does your collection represent?
Oh, probably from 45 to the early 50s.
They were still giving away radio premiums then.
Sure.
You know, the most wonderful address in all the world, Ed, was Chicago, Illinois. The most wonderful things came from Chicago, Illinois. Do you remember?
Yes, I know. Battle Creek, Michigan, they had a few from there, too. But Chicago was that was the premium headquarters, I guess, for the whole industry, wasn't it?
I guess it must have been. You were asked to send in a thin dime. It was always a thin dime. And a box top or a seal from an Ovaltine can or something of that nature. And you had to wait how many weeks, Lou? Do you remember?
Well, probably anywhere from a week to two, if you were lucky in that respect.
Oh, I thought it was longer than that.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, sometimes 6 weeks. Mm, and sometimes you never got it at all, too.
Like 6 months.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a bronze talisman I sent in for from Omar the Mystic.
Well, you just keep waiting.
It'll catch up with me someday, maybe.
Bruce, you were saying that you'd send in the money and the box top on a Monday, and you'd be looking in the mailbox on Tuesday.
Oh, from Tuesday, Wednesday, right on. They always seemed to come, though, on a Saturday morning, which was very nice.
I do recall that, as a matter of fact. I received my Jack Armstrong whistling ring, which you blew there just a moment ago. Go ahead, Lou. Yes, I received that on a Saturday morning. I didn't know you couldn't blow it on your finger, and I managed to cut it up pretty bad.
Remember why you ordered this, Dick? What the reason for having this whistle was? You remember the offer?
Well, I don't specifically, but I would assume that it, in some way, helped you out of a precarious predicament.
Yeah, so you got mugged or something, you could blow the whistle, and it'd come and help you, and all your Jack Armstrong friends, I guess. That was
there
a general idea,
sure.
Yes.
It was also to be the first on your block, was it not?
That's right. That's right. I never seemed to be the
symbol,
first on
yes.
my block, but I managed to get in there somewhere. And they always worked the giveaway, the premium, into the script, didn't they, Ed?
Yes, particularly these decoder badges that always have a secret message on a Friday, what's going to happen next Monday. And if you had the badge, you could tell and, you know, be the first one to know what's going to happen next in the show. And if you didn't have it, you were just left out in the cold. And this was an off and on capped at midnight. A lot of the shows use this technique of giving you a secret message over the air, which only the members can decode.
Jim Harmon, in his book, The Great Radio Heroes, recalls going to the grocery store, buying the Ovaltine, sending in the dime and the top of the Ovaltine can to Chicago, Illinois, to receive one of these secret decoders. Now, Ivan Shark was Captain Midnight's archenemy. Do you remember him, Bruce?
Yeah, sure.
Well, Ivan Shark wanted one of these secret decoder badges in the worst way, because obviously, if he had one of them, he could anticipate Captain Midnight's every move. He would know what we all knew at home. And so he literally killed people, he destroyed cities to get this decoder badge.
That
he
I already,
never got it.
That I already had.
That you had in your home, that I had in mine. He never got it. And one wonders in retrospect, says Jim Harmon, why he didn't go down to the grocery store like we did, you know. But he never thought of
maybe
that.
Maybe he didn't have a thin dime. Who knows?
You know, when you think back, now I don't have any of these radio premiums left. I wish I were that fortunate. But when you think back, you tend to recall them very vividly, and also the picture that comes to mind is one of solidarity, of the item having been well made, of it being something that you would treasure through the years. And you look at the plastic items that come in a cereal box today, and you tend to feel sorry for your youngsters because they are not getting what we got. And the interesting part about what I'm saying, I think perhaps people are going to say, well, they weren't really as good as memory would tell you they were. But the interesting part in seeing these items today is that they really were beautiful items. They were well worth waiting 4 weeks for and paying a thin dime for.
Mm-hmm.
And we may as well talk about some of them. Perhaps some of our listeners are wondering why we don't have television, or isn't it too bad that we don't have television? But that was the whole magic of radio. You never did see these items until they arrived in the mail. What's your earliest item, Lou, or haven't you categorized them as far as age?
I imagine the Jack Armstrong implements, this one in particular, would probably be an association with the Jack Armstrong sound effects kit that went into vivid detail and also set up various radio shows, various parts.
This is a sound effects kit that you're referring to. That
had a microphone made of cardboard, mm-hmm. and I believe it ended up on a broomstick, and once it was assembled. And from there we go to the pedometer, which one wore on his belt as he walked in his daily task to measure his steps and feet and miles.
Now let's take a look at this pedometer. This is at least 2 inches in diameter. Well, in circumference, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made of metal.
Durable metal.
Durable metal. It has 4 dials on it. And this is to indicate your stride, I guess.
Yes.
And all sorts of wonderful little gears inside. And you got this for the dime. And I think, Bruce, this was a little more expensive, wasn't it?
Probably so. He probably took 2 box dials.
Oh, at least.
One.
Yeah, at least. This probably would still work today when you put it on.
Yes, it does.
One of the items that I don't recall personally, but which I'm completely intrigued with, came from the Don Winslow program, and Lou, we'll get to that right after this.
When looking for that new car, may we suggest that you come to the Barrett Mutual Savings Bank? No. The Big B does not sell new or used cars, but it does help people to buy them. Chances are that you didn't know that the Barrett Mutual Savings Bank will make you a car loan at low, low rates. Before buying that new car, call any one of our 4 convenient offices for information. But wait, that's not all. You will need another car when this one wears out. And the Big B has a plan for that, too. When you finish with your new car loan, keep on making the payments into a Burritt Mutual Savings account, where you will earn big, big dividends with no effort at all. Savings rates range from 5 to 6%, depending on the plan you choose. But whatever the plan, the next car you buy will be paid for by your Burritt Mutual Passbook. So don't wait. Drop in at any office of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank for your new car loan or to make that monthly payment on your old car loan. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
And now let's get back to Don Winslow and our guests tonight on the second portion of the Golden Age of Radio, Lou Holcomb and Bruce Murray, collectors of those great radio premiums that were a part of the age. Lou, this item from Don Winslow intrigues me. What is it?
Well, this in particular is a hand stamp. It's a metal container with an ink pad. The design on the stamp is an anchor with the individual's initials. You designated what initials you wanted. You could stamp your hand or woodwork or paper. It appeared readily throughout the house. And
Mom really loved it.
Oh, yes.
And does also, it still work?
Yes, it does. I don't dare use it, though.
Bruce, you remember one of the items from the Tom Mix Show in particular, I think. I'm referring to the ring. Now, which ring is it?
Well, it's the look-around ring.
The look-around ring. Right. How did that work?
Well, on top was a very small square with a mirror in it and 2 slits on either side. And what you would do is if you wanted to observe a friend so he did not know that you were watching him, you would put your finger up. Of course, everybody does that. Put your hand up to your eye and look through your ring,
mm-hmm.
and you could look off to either one side or the other.
Of course, no one would notice you
of
in this action.
Right. Because he had one also, and he was doing the same thing. I'd like to say one thing, though. You mentioned before that with the plastic, there's only one advantage is your finger didn't turn green with the plastic.
Yes, that's right.
I walked around with green fingers for 10 years.
I know. This came with the look-around ring, and I'm going to read it. Dear Straight Shooter, here is your Tom Mix look-around ring from the Ralston Straight Shooters radio program. We know you're going to have a lot of fun with it and surprise your friends by being able to see around corners and over your shoulder without turning your head. Here's the way to use your look-around ring. Put it on your left hand with a crossed pistol design toward the ends of your fingers. Now, the open peephole above the TM bar insignia will be toward your thumb. This is the part you look through, and you can see objects to the left and slightly in back of you. Your look-around ring is adjustable to fit any finger size. To make it smaller, squeeze the overlapping prongs together. To make it large, spread them apart. Your straight shooter pal, Tom Mix.
Signed by Tom Mix.
I bet you carried this around for years.
I probably did. Yeah, probably took it to bed with me, too.
All right, we've mentioned the whistle, which was a part of the Jack Armstrong's sound effects kit, which was a giveaway. We've talked about the look-around ring. How about something of a bit more unusual nature now?
Well, I got this from another collector, Don Brush. I told him we were going to do the show, and he let me borrow this. This is a Charlie McCarthy spoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's a teaspoon made out of genuine gold-plated or silver-plated steel or something underneath. And a little picture of Charlie on top with his top hat. And I believe this was Chasen Sandborn, for the early morning coffee drinkers, that this was the spoon to use that they gave away.
Spoons were, I think, not an uncommon item, certainly on radio programs, because I recall one which was given away by Quaker Oats, which had the picture of Gene and Glenn on the topmost part of the handle. Gene and Glenn with Jake and Lena.
Yes.
They were an early morning program. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, for some time they originated from WTIC, and I'm always intrigued because I remember when that came in the mail, whether at that time the program was originating from here or not. Well, before you is a ring which is really an indicator of the wonderful characteristic of many of these giveaways, the characteristic of glowing in the dark.
This was the Jack Armstrong glow-in-the-dark ring.
Oh, that
somebody
particular...
here might imagine, but it does glow in the dark. It still works. I tried it, and it still glows in the dark.
Yeah, as you said, just about every premium, almost half of them had some feature like that it did glow. It had some fluorescence to it somewhere along the line.
Well, this has a simulated emerald in the top.
It's not real.
Simulated.
And what you had to do, if my memory serves me correctly, you had to charge this thing. You had to put it in front of a
light bulb
for about a minute or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to run into the closet.
Right.
Because that was the only way you could see it. You had to see it in the dark, but it had to be pitch dark. Well, you recall, Bruce, an item along these lines, which was certainly more sophisticated and is a reflection of the atomic age that we live in today. So obviously this occurred in the latter days of the radio premium.
Well, of course, must have been after whenever the first atomic bomb was dropped.
Yeah, August 45.
Yeah. So, what it was a ring, of course, adjustable. It turned your finger green like all the rest.
Right.
And on top was a silver bullet, but it was a bomb, actually, with a little red tail fin on the back, which you removed. And you were supposed to be able to see atomic fission taking place. And again, like you, I used to spend hours in the closet trying to see atomic fission taking place in this ring, and I never did.
No, really? Oh, that's a disappointment. Now, this is something that I never sent away for, but Captain Midnight gave away for a series of 3 or 4 weeks two sheets of paper which glowed in the dark. The idea was that you would cut these things up into designs and paste them on the covers of your books to school, something of that nature. So there again was a glow in the dark. Now, things don't glow in the dark today, I guess.
No, not like they used to, but of course... I think that for the kids, this was something that, you know, a little exciting for them. I think today it's the children are a little more advanced maybe than we were at that time. That's probably the reason.
One of the items that I mentioned earlier was the use of wording, the very careful wording that was always employed in these commercials, descriptions of the radio premiums. One I recall in particular was on the Superman show. It was a walkie-talkie set. Now, the basic item that they were giving away was simply two diaphragms connected by a string. You know, the old
tin can.
But they had a sophisticated giveaway. This was a walkie-talkie tied in, of course, with World War II. And they would describe the color of it, of course, and they would use the word cardboard. That they weren't afraid of. But now they couldn't mention the word string because obviously that would give the whole thing away. You'd know what it really was. So they used communications line. That was the term they used, communications line. And naturally, Jimmy Olsen and Superman and so on were able to use this to get out of very precarious situations.
Kellogg's Pep, the super delicious cereal, presents
the adventures of Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Yes, it's Superman, and today as he hurtles through the skies searching for Jimmy Olsen and Beanie Martin, their very lives are in danger. We'll join him in a moment, but right now, here's Dan McCullough with an exciting walkie-talkie bulletin.
Say, gang, wouldn't you like to be able to send code messages and important reports over a model walkie-talkie? A model just like Joe Martin made for Beanie and Jimmy Olsen? Why, of course you would. And gang, right now is your chance to own a model walkie-talkie. That's right. The Kellogg Company of Battle Creek has one for you if you send for it right away. Now, I'll tell you how to get it in just a minute, but first, I'd like to give you a little more information about this amazing instrument. It's almost a foot high, made of strong cardboard in regular army color, and it comes equipped with a regular receiver transmitter and 48 feet of communication line. And gang, there's almost no limit to the exciting and dramatic things you can do with your Kellogg walkie-talkie. You can communicate with your subordinates from another room without letting anybody else know what you're saying. You can observe enemy maneuvers and report on them to headquarters. You can even talk in code and fool everybody but your lieutenant at the receiver transmitter. Now, here's how you can get this amazing prize. Just send two box tops from that super delicious cereal, Kellogg's Pep, along with 10 cents in cash and your name and complete address, clearly printed, to Superman, Box 80, that's Box 80, Battle Creek, Michigan. Your own Kellogg walkie-talkie will be rushed to you right away. Now be sure to keep listening, gang, because I've got more exciting information about the Kellogg walkie-talkie that I'll give you in just a few minutes.
Getting away from the rings and the badges and the walkie-talkie instruments to something which I'm sure everybody will recall with fond memory, and that is the wonderful mug, which was given away by Little Orphan Annie and by Captain Midnight. Bruce?
Well, I have the Captain Midnight one, and it's orange on the bottom with a blue top and a Captain Midnight seal on the side of it. And used to drink my Ovaltine out of it every day, only because we had to buy three or four bottles to get it originally.
And your mother said, you'll drink that Ovaltine, right?
Well, up until I finally got it away from my mother, she was using it to make gravy up until two or three years ago.
Now, this is one of the giveaways that I recall, Ed, where it was made of plastic. Obviously, a very good grade of plastic.
Yes, very.
And
some are even heavier, I thought, than plastic. Some of the ones I've seen, but I didn't realize that. I thought they were made out of China.
No,
they were made out of plastic.
They used the word plastic in the commercial. At that time, during the middle 40s, plastic had just come in again during the war, and this was something to be emphasized. It was made of plastic, which indicated, of course, it was the newest of materials. Today, you would tend to bury the word if you were...
Well, even they went up on that one, too, Dick. They used to call it Bakelite, even. That was the original plastic. And some of your early premiums back in the days of Skippy were made out of genuine Bakelite, no less. So mm-hmm. even were anteceded the word plastic in the language.
You mentioned China, for example, and although this wasn't a radio premium, this was certainly an item made of China. And whose character is pictured on this little... cup?
Well, Mickey Mouse on this particular one. It evidently was a creamer picture.
Yeah, like a doll set or something maybe, huh?
I'm not going to say where it was made, but it's quite evident. But this probably would go back over a period of some 20 years.
I would even guess that it would go back farther than
maybe
that
it would,
because of the way that Mickey Mouse is depicted. He looks like something out of a 1928... cartoon, I think.
Yes.
I would say probably
that
around
that was a very good year, I might say.
We'll be back to discuss radio premiums with our guests right after this.
When you look into the future for your children, what frightens you the most? The cost of a college education? Right. Well, there's nothing you can do about the rising cost of education, but you can provide for your children by saving. There are several plans open to you at the Big B, the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. The first, a regular savings account, paying 5% from day of deposit to day of withdrawal, with interest compounded monthly. The second, a 6% certificate of deposit. Third, a 5.75% certificate. And fourth, a 5.75% 90-day notice account. If you save a portion of your pay each payday, you'll be pleasantly surprised at the handsome sum you will accumulate over the years. Don't wait. Stop in at any one of Burritt Mutual Savings Bank's four convenient offices and add to your existing account or open your new account today.
Say, gang, haven't you often wanted to be an aviator and be able to handle a plane as expertly as the heroes we've all heard about? Well, naturally, it'll be a good many years yet before you can do that, but here's a grand, easy way you can pick up a lot of valuable aviation dope right now. Sure, it's by studying the information that's printed on the backs of all the exciting prize model planes that come inside all the Kellogg's Pep packages. You see, there's a swell plane model right inside every single package of that super delicious breakfast cereal, Kellogg's Pep. Now, it's made of colored cardboard, and it's just as easy as pie to put together. And on the back of every model plane is a list of special pointers about that particular model. Now, there are models of 14 different planes you can get all together. And among them are exciting models like the Douglas Skymaster. That's a transport, you know. And the British Lancaster Bomber and the Russian 118. And best of all, gang, you don't have to send in a single penny for any of these models. Not even a box top. There's a model plane right inside every Pep package. So, gang, be sure your mother gets you a package of those golden, delicious whole wheat flakes tomorrow. Remember the name, Pep, P-E-P. Pep is made by Kellogg's in Battle Creek.
Our guests tonight on this second portion of the Golden Age of Radio are Lou Holcomb of East Granby and Bruce Murray of Hartford, radio premium collectors. Ed Corcoran, of course, is with us, the man with 2,000 hours of old-time memories on tape. Ed, does your collection include any radio premiums?
No, I did have a lot of these stick, but through various moves, they all disappeared. And the one I did recall vividly, which turned these fellows on, was the Tonix branding iron. It was a painless branding iron, by the way. You didn't have to heat it up. And it had the famous T, or the T-bar-M emblem, and you could stamp it on your arm or your clothing, wherever you had it. And this, again, was the mark of the people who were the more affluent members of the community at that time.
Speaking of Tom Mix, the item that I'm intrigued by is one that I have no recollection of, so evidently it came again in the late 40s, perhaps the early 50s, the Tom Mix Spurs, Bruce.
I think that was probably the last offer that he made. It was, again, the spurs at the back or whatever it's called that you know, supposedly dig into the horse,
mm-hmm.
Glowed in the dark. I don't think they would have been very good for riding. But clanked around in those for a while.
Well, I recall, for example, that I passed up the offer of the Jack Armstrong pedometer, and I was really brokenhearted about it. I really wanted one of these things in the worst way. And lo and behold, about 4 weeks later, they said that for a limited time only, they were going to make the pedometer available again, which means they had a backlog in the warehouse. But I didn't know that at the time, and I really thank my lucky stars that I was able to send in those Wheaties box tops and acquire that wonderful item. You know, we haven't talked about Dick Tracy as yet, Lou, and we certainly can.
Well, this is a Dick Tracy Secret Service Patrol pin star with Dick's face impression on it, and it happens to be, yes, Dick Tracy, and it happens to be a second-year member. I don't know what happened to the first year, but this is made out of a durable metal, and there's a scroll across the star stating Dick Tracy.
You remember the Don Winslow stamp pad that we talked about earlier? Well, you know, the young generation of today has nothing on peace. We were in there as well back in the 30s and 40s with Don Winslow and his Squadron of Peace. That's what it was called. So there really isn't anything really new under the sun. All right, I'm going to put you all on the spot. I want some opinions here. Why do you think the premium offers have disappeared? Obviously, radio, as we're discussing it tonight, has disappeared, but certainly there would be comparable programming in television, at least in the early days, that would offer these items, and yet they were never offered. Why? Well, first of all, Ed, what about you?
I hope you was going to ask me last, Dick. Well, I think one reason is perhaps this was really during the Depression and or right after, during the war years, when perhaps things were a little bit different. We didn't have all the advantages of today, and I think probably the kids today would not just be turned on by these things. They go down and buy anything they want in the store, you might say.
I might have a different opinion on that. Well, I'd have to project this to television, but noticing why some of the youngsters are glued to the set, so to say, that if premiums were offered, I think they might gain the response that we afforded them back in our day.
Kids are still
medium
kids.
Today, right? Yeah. Kids are still very good. That's right. Yes.
Well, Bruce, what are your feelings on the subject?
Well, I think it could go along with the appeal radio had to begin with, that you couldn't really see what you were getting.
Right.
Because you wouldn't get it. Yeah.
The descriptions were so fantastic for this thing, right, or whatever the premium might be, that when you got it, you might be happy, and then again you'd say, well, I think I wasted my thin dime and ate that whole box of shredded wheat for nothing.
Right.
But today they'd have to show it on the air, much like the Superman, the communications line. If you actually saw what this cardboard thing looked like, maybe you would never send for it.
That's right. And even with the finest of items, and I'm talking about, for example, the whistling ring, I think that if you were to show it, to see it on television, that you would not be inclined to be
mystified. No, that's right. The mystery is the whole thing, Dick, right.
And I think that this is probably why we don't have them today. This was the whole magic of radio. But you know, the one thing that I'm disappointed in, and you know this, Lou, the one item that you don't have is the Jack Armstrong Magic Answer Box.
You and I have discussed this, and I told you that I did have one, and very possibly it may be still somewhere in storage. But I remember quite vividly it's still in the same cardboard cotton that it arrived in, mm-hmm, probably on a Saturday morning.
I know mine came on a Saturday morning.
It was a box that probably was about an inch and a half in width and, maybe 4 to 5 inches in length.
Mm-hmm.
Had an isinglass face on it, a needle, and there was two responses, yes and no. Am I correct?
No, there were more than that.
Oh, was there?
Yes,
there was
something
else.
I remember, yes and
yes.
No.
Oh, maybe?
No.
Maybe?
Maybe?
Try again. You said it. Things of this nature.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you held that in your hand and you asked it a question, and it did respond.
Yes, you placed your thumb over a piece of carbon paper, I believe, on the side.
Oh, I forgot. No,
you asked the question, then placed your thumb over the carbon paper. Probably it's caused some sort of an electrical response. I don't know. But anyway, this needle moved over, and you got your answer.
Well, like the Ouija board in some respects, huh? Something along those lines?
Yeah. I could use one of those magic answer boxes today. Get a few answers once in a while.
Maybe send one to Washington.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being our guests tonight, Lou Holcomb and Bruce Murray.
Dick.
And I certainly have enjoyed these memories, and thank you very much for sharing them with our radio audience.
Have you ever heard of the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank and wondered where it got its name? If so, you may be interested in this explanation. The Burritt is in recognition of one of this area's most noteworthy citizens of the 1800s, Mr. Elihu Burritt, the learned blacksmith. Elihu Burritt was a self-taught linguist, a patriot, and peace emissary who served his country here and abroad. The mutual came from the fact that the bank is owned by and operated for its depositors. There are no stockholders in the bank. Established in 1889, the bank has served generations of depositors and borrowers in central Connecticut and is today a large, strong, and successful institution. When you save at Burritt, you commemorate the glorious past, profit from the successful present, and share in the promise of an eventful future. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, a proud mutual savings bank with offices in New Britain, West Hartford, and Rocky Hill.
Well, Ed, our guest next month is going to be a very renowned lady of the microphone.
Lady of letters as well. Right?
Yes, I think you know to whom I'm referring.
Yeah, it could be Mary Jane Higbee, couldn't it, by any chance?
Yes, it could.
Well, very good. I guess right. Do I get a premium or do I get the right answer?
Just take your pick.
Yeah,
so. Until next time, then, this is Dick Bertel.
And this is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
Tonight's program has been brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving central Connecticut since 1889. The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel was produced and edited by Brian Hartnett, engineering by Dick French and Bob Schirago. This is Bill Hansen speaking.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Camay, the mild beauty soap for a smoother, softer complexion.
Rinse
so white and rim so bright.
Broadcasting from New York City, the Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and Louis.